Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. These days, it's much easier to avoid face-to-face contact in favor of technological shortcuts, but this is not the way of true leaders. No, meaningful relationships that come from in-person interactions are the key to creating innovative ideas and solving our most intractable problems. Developing rapport with others is not just a business tool to enhance productivity, but a valuable end in itself. Our guest today is Michael Gelb, author of the new book, The Art of Connection: 7 Relationship Building Skills Every Leader Needs Now. Michael has pioneered the fields of creative thinking, accelerated learning, and innovative leadership. He leads seminars for organizations such as DuPont, Merck, Microsoft, Nike, Raytheon, and the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business. He is the co-author of Brain Power and the author of How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci and several other bestsellers. Hello, Michael, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
Great to be with you.
Now, you're well known as a thought leader in creativity and innovation and leadership. So how did it come about that you've written a book now about relationships?
Well, it turns out that creativity, thinking up new ideas that have subjective value, is something that is fairly easy to teach people. I work with a lot of engineers, a lot of scientists. I was with a group of 200 PhD biochemists just yesterday, as a matter of fact. And when I asked them at the beginning of our session if they thought they were creative, you should have seen the looks on their face. And by the time I finished with them, they blew away the scores of a classic creativity test. They were generating lots of ideas. They had strategies for making new connections between these ideas. I introduced them to the 7 principles for thinking like Leonardo da Vinci. I told them about the 5 keys to Edison's innovation culture. And in decades of teaching this, I've also had the opportunity to consult with companies about, okay, how do you really apply your creative thinking? Let's say you get the good idea. How do you make it real? And of course, that's all about relationships. That's all about connection. It's all about working with other people. It's all about connecting with people who might look at the world differently than you do, so you can build alliances. So I've been studying this. I've been working with it. I've been doing it myself because my whole business is a relationship business. Many of my clients have been clients for years and years and years. The ones who've retired, because I've been doing this a really long time, I'm now connected with their next generation and sometimes even the third generation of clients. Relationships are what it's really all about if you want to make creative things happen.
Now, you say that your business is really a relationship business. And I used to be in management, and I was a CEO of a company. And one of my favorite sayings was that business is a function of relationship rather than the other way around. And it seems that that's what the art of connection is really all about.
That's the essence. I'm so thrilled you said that, because one of my clients is a construction management company based in Manhattan, in New York City. And it's hard to imagine the complexity and the technical rigor of what these people coordinate. I mean, you can imagine cranes and concrete's being poured, and there's carpenters and electricians on site. And this company organizes all this, and you know, their job, they got to get the building built on time. They got to get it done on budget. They have to make sure that nobody dies in the process or gets injured. It's incredibly complex. So I was actually leading a seminar for them on the material in The Art of Connection. And one of them, who'd been, you know, this veteran, he's been around for years and years, he was a senior project supervisor. He says, "Oh man, I get it. We're not in the construction business. We're in the relationship business."
That's right. Exactly. That's what I used to lecture my employees about that we were in the relationship business. That's beautiful. Did it take you a long time for you personally to realize that in your own personal development? I mean, that the art of connection is the secret, really, of the of health, happiness, and success?
I would say yes. It did. It took me a while. It took me a while to recognize that. In the beginning, you know, I had all this fabulous information and insight, and you can tell I'm an extrovert. I love to share. I love to inspire people. I was totally focused on sharing the gospel of brain power and creativity and think like Leonardo and learning from these great geniuses' history. But I learned that everything I had to say was only came to life as it resonated in the minds and hearts and the action of different people. So I shifted my orientation from my subject to the audience. I just realized it's about the audience. Now, obviously, I care about the subject, and facts really do matter, and I try to create the marriage of this historical wisdom and these insights into how to innovate and create to match that with the consciousness of the person in the room, even if that person in the room happened to have a very different style of processing information than I do. And I think, you know, it's part of why I've been able to do this for 38 years, and I'm just warming up for the next 38.
Mm-hmm. And you have a lot to say about the benefits of a positive sense of connection. Let's talk about that for a minute. I mean, you point out that there's physical, emotional, and mental benefits.
Yes. Well, the world's longest running social psychology study, it's in its fourth generation, began with undergraduates at Harvard and a similar size group of young men from Roxbury, Massachusetts. And as you might imagine, the Harvard fellows were higher on the socioeconomic scale. The Roxbury guys were lower to start with. But they asked both groups, what is the secret of happiness? What will make your life a success? And as you might imagine, young men all said, make a lot of money, attain a senior position, have a great car, a fantastic house, and so on. But as they followed them over the course of the years, they found that the one key determinant of their happiness and correlate with their wellness and their longevity wasn't their position, wasn't their money, wasn't their car. It was their sense of connection.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you point out that people who are more connected to others have lower levels of anxiety and depression.
Not only that, they're more resilient as they get older and less likely to experience dementia of any form. One study, this is in my Brain Power book, which I wrote to commemorate my own 60th birthday, because this stuff is important. One study had two groups of 80-year-olds, and one of the groups defined themselves as lonely. And a significant portion of that group didn't make it to 85. And of those who did, there was a high percentage of people who had some form of dementia. The other group of 80-year-olds who had three or more regular positive social connections, much greater percentage of that group was alive at age 85, and they were much less likely to have any form of dementia. So connection really makes a profound difference at every level. And you know, it's so sad. It's a tragedy of opioid abuse and addiction in our society. And I've been musing on the fact that, you know, this addiction is, it's like the opposite of the sense of connection. So when people don't have it, they seek some kind of substitute.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. And I imagine that you're doing really well these days because, as you point out, the distinguishing attribute of the finest leaders is their skill in building relationships. And I, you know, we see a lot of pretty lame leadership out there. You know, it seems to me that we're suffering from some of this problem in terms of our entire country right now, this confusion about the best way to do leadership.
I think what's really important, it's so easy to criticize someone outside if you see them acting in a obviously unacceptable way, especially on a grand stage. But it's really important to look first for those own qualities in yourself. Let's all take responsibility in our own lives for making sure that we're being empathic, that we're being kind, that we're being respectful, that we're being considerate. Let's make sure we are really the change we want to see in the world, beginning at home, literally. I mean, with your loved ones, with your friends and extended family, with your associates and colleagues in the workplace, and basically with all sentient beings. It's being awake enough to make sure that you're not acting out any of your unconscious resentments or frustrations or in your own life. So let's all change the world by figuring out how we can change our own relationships so that they are more connected.
And you bring up that point so well in this point that you make in the book. Finding the center of strength within ourselves is, in the long run, the best contribution we can make. And how does that tie in with the very first chapter of your book, Embrace Humility?
Well, it's a wonderful revelation when we understand that humility really is the source of strength. Ego is building your house on sand. And you're always struggling. You're always trying to make something happen that can't really happen because you're living an illusion. And when you operate from ego, you're unfortunately usually bringing out the worst in other people.
Right.
So operate instead, not from, you know, I say humility, I'm not talking about self-deprecation or acting like you're not important. That's false humility.
Mm-hmm.
Real humility is shifting out of the ego into that aspect of being which we all share. We all share the same needs. We all share the same fundamental pure consciousness that informs our existence. And everyone is a different, unique, and special refraction of that consciousness. So if we take that attitude, it's a kind of humility that has within it a grace and power.
Yeah, I think it's beautiful the way that you point out that ironically, especially in a venue that has to do with leadership, that humility is actually a competitive advantage.
It really is, because, and this is now research validated. It's not just anecdotal wisdom, but it makes sense because leaders need to be approachable. Leaders need to be empathic because leadership is really the art of meeting people's needs. And if you don't empathize with what people's needs are, how can you respond to them effectively? And if you're a senior leader, it means you have to meet the needs of lots of different constituencies. So first you have to understand those needs. I mean, in a business, we're talking about obviously clients, customers, but we're talking about all of your associates and colleagues, all of the vendors and suppliers that you interact with, all of the investors, your community, the environment. So it's the art of connection. I mean, leadership really is the art of connection.
And you really can't go there unless you've got a certain amount of self-knowledge. I mean, I think your book is all about self-knowledge from one point of view. And I love how you quote, I think, is it Oscar Wilde who's quipped, "Only the shallow know themselves." So this is about the power of curiosity and the relationship between humility and curiosity.
You got it. That's the thing. See, when the other beauty of humility is, what's the opposite of arrogance? So if you have humility, if you're arrogant, you're not curious. You think you know it all. If you have humility, you're curious and you want to learn. You want to know. You ask more questions. You get people more engaged. You get people more involved. You get people more inspired. And then they're going to do a better job and they're going to be happier and they're going to know they can trust you because you're accessible. And, you know, I was telling you about the senior manager from this New York construction company who had this epiphany when he realized we're all in the relationship business. Well, in the same seminar, he also said, won't my people think I'm weak if I ask them for their ideas? I just love that he said this. First of all, that we created an environment where he felt a sense of trust enough that he could share that. And I think, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, he might have been right, because the macho, hierarchical, top-down, command and control mode was the dominant mode, especially in the construction management business. But what was fascinating, I facilitated a dialogue with some of the younger people in the room. And they shared with him, you know, for us, when you ask what we think, it really lets us know that you respect us and value us. And what was really marvelous is they said, and we know that you have way more technical knowledge than we do. So we're probably going to wind up agreeing with you. And we just feel so much more respected if you ask us. And then I said to him, and you never know, you might actually learn something. And everybody laughed, and you could feel, but this is what I love. This is part of my passion in my work. No, actually, what I love the most is that sense, those moments where everybody in the room just feels connected. Everybody feels alignment. I love that in everyday life. I love it if it's with the cashier when I'm checking out of the grocery store. I love it if we're getting out of the airplane and I'm helping somebody pull down their bag from the overhead rack and eyes meet for a moment. Or if they're helping me, it doesn't matter. It's just this is what Jane Dutton, who's a brilliant researcher in this area, she calls them HQCs, high quality connections. And it doesn't take much time at all when you just know you're all on the same wavelength. We all share this same fundamental sense of sweet, delightful soulfulness in the midst of whatever major transactions or business or things we're trying to get done.
And you talk about being on the same wavelength, and especially in the context of traditional top-down management, I love the point you make in the book, the greatest single problem in communication. It's the illusion that it has taken place successfully. That's hilarious.
Right. It's just, well, you know, the funny thing is that's based on something that's supposed to be a quote from George Bernard Shaw, except he didn't actually say it. And I spent a lot of time researching the real sources of everything that I share in the book, because we know that there's a lot of fake news around now. And one of my favorite quotes is, most of the quotes on the internet are accurate. George Washington.
That's hilarious. That's pretty funny. You know, in chapter 5, you get into this whole aspect of balance and balancing energy, energy exchange, balance of power in a relationship. I love the story that you tell about you and your wife. And
yes.
And can you share that with us, please?
With pleasure. So I met the woman who would become my wife. We were in California, and we're at a seminar where I was one of the speakers. I wrote this book called Body Learning, An Introduction to the Alexander Technique, and she read it when she was at Juilliard. She's a world-class opera singer now. Then she was an opera student. Anyway, she came on this seminar, and we met and made a really nice connection, but I wasn't being presumptuous about it at all, because we had 23-year age difference, and I was one of the teachers, and I wrote the book, so I just wasn't being presumptuous. But she said to me at the end of the seminar, she asked, I think, for my connection information, and I happened to just say to her, hey, if you're coming to the New York area, let me know. It'd be fun to get together. And she said, I'm coming next month for my Carnegie Hall debut.
Wow.
So yeah, pretty cool, huh? So I said, well, let me take you out to celebrate. And the truth is, I didn't even know if it was a date, because I promise I wasn't being presumptuous. And I just thought, this is the most gifted, talented, and beautiful soul I've ever come across. If there's anything I can do to support her, I'd like to do it. And there's a long shot chance that it could be a real romance. Anyway, she came to my home. I made her dinner. I served her fabulous wine. We're drinking the wine, and I know she's at the time she was on an apprentice opera singer budget, so I know, you know, her idea of a big night is a frozen burrito and a Corona. So, and I served her a 1997 Chachi Piccolomini Brunello di Montalcino, but she puts her nose in the glass, and in an utterly unpretentious way, she describes the wine in accurate and poetic terms. I'm thinking, this is the girl for me. And I didn't know it was a date because she said to me on the way over to my place, she said, I was getting ready for her date. So that was for our date. So that was the first moment I knew it was actually a date. Anyway, it's obvious that there's this magic taking place between us. And she stops and she says, look, there's something we have to talk about before anything happens here. And she says, the last person I was with was 15 years older than me and had more established position in the world, more money, and I felt controlled and manipulated in that relationship. So I'm really concerned about meeting you and making this connection because you're older and you're even more established and more successful. So what do you say to that? So I paused and I took a sip of the Brunello. Unfortunately, it's something I'd already been thinking a lot about. And I just said from my heart, I said, look, I know the balance of energy and relationships is as important to me as it is to you. And whether you have the same amount of money or a different amount of money, the same age or different age, same experience, different experience, whatever the formal or external distinctions are, relationship requires an open dialogue about the balance of the energy exchange so that both people feel that there's an abundance of love and that they're being enriched and that I want to feel grateful. I want you to feel grateful. And I'd like us to feel that way for all of our relationship. And that must have been the right answer because I'm telling you, she put her wine glass down and started kissing me.
That's one way to know that it's the right answer.
and we've been together ever since that day.
Wow.
And we still, you know, and really, you know, we go for a walk. We try to do this at least once a week, and we talk about this because you have to articulate it.
Right.
And you know, through those walks, I mean, I learn. Took a while, but I learned that she really wanted to relocate from Santa Fe, where we had lived for quite a while, back to the New York area. And it took a while for it to really sink in. But when I really learned that it was just time for us to move, I could feel that the balance to maintain her happiness. You know, we had lived in Santa Fe, which I was in love with living in Santa Fe, and now I could just feel. She really, really wanted to come back. But she wasn't being that assertive in telling me. I had to kind of read it.
Right.
But once I got it, you know, we made the move. This is where we live. And we're, you know, the energy is flowing in a beautiful, loving, wonderful way. Because like I said before, it's about meeting each other's needs. And to do that, you have to be empathic. And to do that, you have to listen. And to do that, you have to be humble and not just assume, oh, well, hey, we're in the right place. We're doing the right thing. I'm happy, so you must be as well.
Right. And I think it's so interesting. It's a great story. Thank you very much for sharing that, because it's so interesting that balancing an energy exchange requires a recognition of the other person's different needs, perhaps even different values. I mean, in this society, you know, we're so obsessed with certain sources of power and meaning, like money and power in the political sense, that we can't appreciate the other sources of value and power. And so, like, you know, here you are, maybe you have more money, maybe you have, you know, more power in the ways that the world glorifies, but you've got to deal with people that are like your wife or your employees or whatever, who need something different or who have something different to give. You know, this sort of brings up this point you make in the book. It's a quote by Mary Kay that two things people want more than sex and money are recognition and praise.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm talking about, this balancing energy, is what you're writing a whole book about, is how do leaders get along with their people.
Yeah, and it's an art. That's, you know, it's why I called it the art of connection. It's not just a series of simple tips and just try this and it'll all be fine. You have a firm handshake and look people in the eye and you'll be climbing the ladder to success. That, there's a lot of stuff out like that, and that's fine. But if you really want a rich, full relationship life, it's a never-ending quest. I mean, this is a profound journey because, as we said earlier, you have to have that core of self-knowledge and self-awareness.
Right, right.
And that's an ongoing, that's a continuous process.
That's a lifetime project. And boy, we could talk for a long time. I would love to talk a lot longer, but we have run out of time. I just looked at the clock. And so we've got to stop now. And I just want to thank you so much for being on the show. And I want to let our listeners know about your website, which is www.michaelgelb.com. That's all one word, Michael Gelb, G-E-L-B. And for those who tuned in late, this is your Pathways host, Paul O'Brien, author of Great Decisions, Perfect Timing, a book that shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. In a second, I will tell you how to rewind and replay this interview anytime you like, via the internet or as a free podcast. Today we've been visiting with Michael Gelb, author of The Art of Connection, 7 Relationship Building Skills Every Leader Needs Now. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed worldwide via KBOO.FM, Sunday mornings at 8:30 a.m. USA Pacific Time. Podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com, spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes and other free podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and podcasts. And thanks again to Michael Gelb and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways experience.